Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Dozens of deaths reported. I'm Michael Toscano. Almost 3 million customers still without power. Flooding continues and roads remain closed. That's the situation in six states ravaged by Hurricane Helene. In North Carolina, scores of homes are submerged in Charlotte, where rescue crews helped Tom Davis and his horse get to dry land.
Every house down here is gone. Every house down here. There's 60 different property owners.
CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula is in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Authorities in the western North Carolina mountains are calling it biblical devastation. There has been a heavy loss of life in the state. Hundreds are stranded in their homes that have been cut off because roads have been washed away. Portions of busy interstates 26 and 40 have also been washed away in several locations. The city of Asheville at this point is basically cut off from the rest of the world.
In Florida, the National Guard has been busy, as we hear from Governor Ron DeSantis.
Florida National Guard by itself has cleared almost 1,200 miles of road. They've rescued 155 personnel and 156 pets.
Israeli airstrikes have killed not only Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, but also Iranian Revolutionary Guard leader Abbas Neil Farouchon. Iran's foreign minister has warned the U.S. to expect repercussions, noted by White House National Security spokesman John Kirby.
We've seen the rhetoric coming out of Tehran. We'll watch and see what they do. We certainly will make sure that we have the capability to not only defend our troops and our facilities, diplomats and military, as well as Israel.
Kirby was on CNN's State of the Union. In Lebanon, 120 Hezbollah targets have been hit by Israeli warplanes and drones today after already killing much of Hezbollah's leadership in recent days. Linda Gradstein reports on the chaos now in Lebanon.
The UN says 200,000 people are internally displaced in Lebanon and 50,000 have fled to Syria. Israel has told residents of the Dahiya suburb of Beirut, a Hezbollah stronghold, to flee their homes as it attacks rocket launchers and weapons stores, which Israel says are often hidden in residential apartments.
The hours are ticking down to the vice presidential debate being hosted by CBS News, and the candidates are getting ready.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz met Michigan fans rooting for a win against his home state university. Walz is spending the rest of the weekend preparing for Tuesday's first and only debate against Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance. The Ohio senator is also getting ready for the debate following appearances yesterday in Pennsylvania.
We got to fire Kamala Harris and not give her a promotion.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A small group of people in Wisconsin is doing its part to keep Native American languages from going silent. Mike Moan introduces us to the Indigenous Language Table.
Laura Red Eagle, a writer and member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, grew up in rural Wisconsin and says she was somewhat disconnected from her tribal roots. Eventually, she embarked on a learning journey that reconnected her with her ancestors' traditional words and phrases. Her perseverance led to the Indigenous Language Table at the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery in Madison. It's a communal gathering that meets once a week, emphasizing the importance of using the language in everyday conversations.
It takes a veil away. You can kind of see how people think, how you view the world. You can ask questions, and you don't feel stupid for doing that because anybody that's showing up for a language class is already super brave.
She feels the most successful revitalization efforts involve multiple participants as opposed to practicing the language alone. Red Eagle says what makes the Indigenous Language Table great is that it doesn't lend itself to an exhausting learning experience.
If they can speak one or two words or at least, you know, get their introduction done or hear some more, then it's worth it. And I don't know, they feel revitalized themselves in doing it.
The weekly events hosted by Red Eagle are attended by natives and non-natives. She says her efforts offer a blueprint for creating vibrant language communities around Wisconsin and beyond. The United Nations warns that more than half of the world's languages will become extinct by the year 2100, a direct consequence of colonialism. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. This story was produced with original reporting from Robert Bordeaux for Arts Midwest.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny skies for today. The big story, though, that breezy north wind gusting up around 30 miles per hour. That will cause some large waves there along the shoreline. High temperatures in the lower 70s. For the overnight, mostly clear, lower 60s. Currently 71 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow.
Monday morning on Up North News Radio, State Senator Kelderoy's on how Republicans just keep digging a bigger hole when it comes to women's reproductive health care rights.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Oh my goodness. Another week has gone by, and here we are, revolutionaries. You've reached the Rational Revolution. I am your host, Mark Becker. Thank you so much for joining us. Did you know that you can text the show? I didn't know that. I mean, I did. I didn't know how we could do it, but I do now. And what you do is you download the free Civic Media app, and you select your station, whichever station. We got stations all over the state. And then you can text into the show from the app. And later on in the show, I'm going to ask for some audience participation. So as you're listening, download that app and stay tuned for that whole thing. So if you missed last week's episode, that was awesome. We had some wonderful conversations. We talked to, oh goodness, Joe Walsh, and then we talked to the campaign manager for Harris campaign, and it was really awesome to be able to speak with both of them. So if you want to catch that episode and you didn't, when you download the free Civic Media app, you can listen to all the episodes there too, just like this one with our dear friend, returning guest, and fellow revolutionary, Mr. Carlton Huffman. How are you?
Doing well. We're at that time of the season where my mood is completely tied to the fortunes of the Georgia Bulldogs. So we'll see how the Saturday evening's clash with the Alabama Crimson Tide goes. But right now, I got to give you credit. Your Tennessee Volunteers are looking pretty good this year. So yes, we might be seeing each other not just in the regular season, but in the college football playoffs.
I know. And I think, you know, we have our common enemy in the Alabama Crimson Tide. I can't stand them. And so, you know, I do hope they lose in glorious fashion. Tennessee doesn't play this week. But that's cool. My son and I, we do enjoy watching those Volunteers play football. So yeah, how's Georgia's doing good?
Well, I mean, we looked pretty mortal going up against Kentucky.
I saw that.
It's like Georgia football always likes to have at least one heart attack game of the year. I mean, we have not lost a regular season game in three seasons. They came within 1 point of doing so against Kentucky, but they had a bye week last week. So we'll see if they've got the kinks out of the system, and hopefully they roll through Tuscaloosa tonight. I'm not even going to let the fact that the convicted felon and current Republican nominee Donald Trump is going to be at the game.
Oh, God, is he really?
He likes to show up to these things, even though it makes 90,000 people have to go through metal detectors, bag searches, and everything else, all so that he can get his photo op.
Right, and he probably only stays for like a quarter and a half. You know, that's interesting.
If that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, that he was going to be at the game. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, when you consider the fact that, I mean, when we last spoke, Joe Biden was still the nominee and Georgia was looking to be increasingly off the map for the Democrats. But now with the switch up and Kamala being in the driver's seat, Georgia is back in play. And so, of course, Donald Trump is going to try and grab every vote that he can through all the attention that he can get. And she's going to try and do the same. So And now I can sit here and say North Carolina, too, where I'm sitting at, we are once again a battleground state, and it's anybody's ballgame.
Yeah, it's really remarkable how things have changed in the last, since we last spoke. And, where we are at the state of the national race, I did like the 538 forecast. And what the 538, for those of you who don't know, is like a prognosticator's prognostication machine. And they have all sorts of different scenarios and all of that. And so what they do is they do like the 538 forecast. And they do 100 scenarios. And I just did it this morning. And in those 100 scenarios, Harris wins 56 times and Trump wins 43. And the map itself has shifted. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, back whenever Joe Biden was still the nominee, it was looking increasingly like, due to his flagging numbers with young people and definitely minority voters, particularly black voters, that the Sun Belt, meaning North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and maybe Nevada, were off the map for him, and that they were looking increasingly like that Trump was going to carry those states. And so that left basically one path for Joe Biden to retain the presidency, and that was to sweep the blue wall, which is Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and to pick up the one electoral vote from Nebraska, which we recently saw the Republicans attempted to change the rules very late in the game to take that one vote from Nebraska off the table. But that was Joe Biden's one pass to 270. And after the debate in Atlanta back in June, it increasingly looked like not even that was going to happen. But once Kamala Harris took the helm, and she has performed way above the expectations that I myself had and like so many national pundits had of her. She has made this a race, and now North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada are very much in play. And we can see with the spending of the Trump campaign that they see the danger too. And you see it where both him and Vance are spending their time. And it basically comes down to either one of those Sun Belt states and the state of Pennsylvania. If Kamala wins Pennsylvania, it's game over. If Trump wins Pennsylvania, it's going to be a rough ride for American democracy.
Well, and I was playing around on some of those, was it the electoral map, simulators or whatever. And I noticed that I don't think Kamala Harris really even needs to win Arizona. I mean, if she retains the blue wall, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, it's game over, regardless of Georgia, North Carolina, whatever, it's done. That's game, set, match.
It absolutely is, but it also just is a testament to the state of the change race, and it also just to the state of the electorate, that most everybody, I think, in this country at the very beginning of the cycle, we could look at the two of them. Those of us on the pro-democracy side could look at Joe Biden and say, you saved American democracy in 2020. You have been a good and capable president, but to finish your term at 86 is something that we could all look at that and say, that is a questionable bet. We will definitely vote for that over Trump, but for so many people in the country, they had questions, which I believe were legitimate, about his capability of finishing out the rest of this term and finishing a full second term. But now you see people are looking at this race through an entirely different lens. And here we are just less than 6 weeks out. We are right here where early voting is already beginning in certain states. Absentee ballots are going out. And you can see that the Democrats have regained an advantage, which Trump had started after his conviction to close the money gap. But then this last reporting quarter, Kamala outraised him 4-1, which is astounding considering how much Trump was able to raise, but also the fact that Trump is spending more money than he is bringing in. And they do not have an established ground game within the framework of the RNC and the Republican Party of Wisconsin and all the other battleground Republican state parties. It is probably one of the weirdest structures I've seen in terms of how the Republicans are trying to get out their vote, basically using super PACs and third-party groups. But here we are with Kamala at a better than even chance of pulling this thing off. And I just would encourage all of your listeners who are pro-democracy revolutionaries, do not take this for granted. It looks decent right now, but it can still shift with all that we've seen change since this last June.
Well, and you know, I spoke with last week with Garen Randolph, who is Kamala Harris's Wisconsin campaign manager, and we talked about the PTSD that, like, I remember what 2016 was like. I mean, you remember that very well too. And it was Hillary Clinton was up big in all of these states, to the point where Hillary almost like all but pulled out of Wisconsin because she was so far ahead in all of the polls. And then we all know what happened in Philadelphia, and that glass ceiling was not shattered at all. Wisconsin flipped, and all these states that were looking like this was going to be this coronation, this huge moment for our country. And it didn't happen. And so how, you know, I asked Garen, how do we assure that that doesn't happen again?
I mean, basically it is donate to the Democrat Party of Wisconsin, the Kamala campaign, donate to Tammy Baldwin and all the congressional candidates. Make sure that if you've got a chance to make some phone calls, send some text messages, go out and knock some doors on the rest of these remaining 5 weekends of the election. Do not let off the gas right here, because the Trump team, they have a weird structure right now. They have a lot of structural disadvantages compared to where Kamala is. But the simple fact remains that there is at least 46 to 47% of this country that are locked in with Trump, whether they love and adore him or just simply hate the vision that they think that the Democrats are putting forward to this country. It is basically, you got a few dollars, send them to all those various campaigns. You've got some time, just get up and go. I think it was Dr. King said it best, if you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. But by whatever means, you have the capability of doing something. Let's do it now while it counts between now and the polls closing on November 5th.
You ever think you would have said that, like what you just said?
If you had told me in 2016 that I would have ever considered voting for a national Democrat, I would have told you you're crazy. If you had told me that I want the Democrats to maintain control of the United States Senate and potentially flip the House, I would have told you you're crazy. But we look and see where the Republican Party has gone. We saw just this last week that Clay Higgins, who was a congressman from Louisiana, basically tell the Haitian residents in Springfield, Ohio, to his words, get the hell out of this country before January the 20th.
Yeah.
I mean, an openly racist statement to people who are here in this country legally.
Right.
That is what the Republican Party has become, and that is entirely because they decided to hitch their wagon to Donald Trump, thinking that they could control him, and instead they became just like him.
Yeah, it really is something that's now, you know, my, how the mighty have fallen, and it's really a sad state of affairs when you look at where the party is nationally, where it was, and, you know, it's the party of Reagan and Lincoln and Bush and McCain, and here we are, you know, telling legal, you know, migrants here to get the hell out, you know, charged, racially charged statements, bigotry, all this stuff. It's just something that is disgusting, and it's really a shame. But we're going to talk about Congress and the balance of power here in the next segment. We are talking with dear friend of the show, Carlton Huffman. We'll see you right back shortly.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
At Fleet Farm, we know every opening day doesn't begin and end with us. But if it did, we've got you covered. Everyday hunting gear from Winchester, Remington, and Bear. Everyday fishing gear from Daiwa, St. Croix, and Rapala. Everyday yard cleanup from Scott's, Fiskars, and Agri-Fab. Whatever makes your day, we're right there with you. At Fleet Farm, we've got everything you need for everyday life.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Boston. I love it. If you don't know, well, welcome to the Rational Revolution. Welcome back here. I'm Mark Becker, your host. In our house, we are huge Boston Red Sox fans. Not the Patriots, because, you know, screw those guys. But we love the Red Sox because my aunt and uncle used to live out there, and I became a fan of them when I was little. And off the air, Carlton and I were talking baseball, and one of the things that we're on the precipice of history here. So if you don't know, the Chicago White Sox are one game away from being the worst team in modern baseball history, but they're riding a three-game winning streak. Like, what in God's name? So we're waiting on bated breath for history to happen down in the old Chicago South Side. So, but anyway, we've got Carlton here. Hi, Carlton. How are you?
Basically feeling like the Atlanta Braves right now. We're white-knuckling it until Monday to find out whether we actually have a shot in the playoffs or not. Just like the country is pretty much white-knuckling it until November 5th or whenever we get a winner's tournament.
Yes, that's exactly, and that's a good segue to talk about Congress and the balance of power. How does that look?
If you're looking at the United States Senate and you are hoping that the Democrats retain their majority, it is looking increasingly precarious, basically because we went into this cycle, the Democrats had 51 seats and 49 for the Republicans, and the map was decidedly one that the Republicans were set to overperform in a presidential year. The most endangered Senate seat has got to be John Tester out there in Montana. He is looking increasingly like it's not going to happen for him in terms of making that race. I mean, he has defied history in both 2012 and 2018 when the Republicans thinking they were going to knock him off. But it looks like maybe the third time is going to be the charm. And the Joe Manchin seat, whether you wanted to count him as a Democrat or not, in West Virginia is all but assured to go to the Republicans. And just those two seats right there, that would put the Republicans in the majority regardless of the result of the presidential race. Though today we saw an announcement from the Democrat Senate committee in Washington that they are looking to put money into two states that we never thought would be the ones the Democrats would think about throwing money into because they're so expensive and because they were seen as out of reach. But they are looking to go into Florida against Rick Scott and then also to go into Texas against, of all people, Ted Cruz.
Is that the Ted Cruz move is wild. Is that more of like trolling Ted Cruz than it is?
It is based on like recent polling in both Florida and Texas have reflected the fact that despite the both states' relative Republican tilt, that if you are looking for two more unlikable people in the United States Senate, you would be hard-pressed to find two people more unlikable than Ted Cruz and Rick Scott. Ted is one that ever since he realized he was not going to be president, after knuckling under to Trump, he came within 2 points of being upset 6 years ago. Beto O'Rourke. We've got a Democrat down there who's a former NFL player, Colin Allred, who has both a good biography and a good record as a bipartisan, solutions-oriented member of Congress. He has kept the race within single digits of Ted Cruz. And the fact is that Texas is an expensive state. It might seem like fool's gold to go into both there in Florida. But at this point, the Democrats, if they've got money and they've got two very unpopular Republican incumbents, that's the way to go. And I think that everybody looking at the Rust Belt states, including Wisconsin, they believe that the top of the ticket race will largely be tied to what happens in those Senate races. Sure. So I think Tammy Baldwin is doing a very good job against Eric Covey. She is set to outperform top of the ticket, and that is looking to be the same scenario with Bob Casey in Pennsylvania. So yeah. If Kamala Harris can win both Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, the Democrats are likely to keep those Senate seats. And I think that that's imperative on them just because of the way that the Senate map is tilted. If they want to have a shot at either retaining or taking back the Senate in 2026, should they lose it this time, they have to limit their losses. But on the plus side for Democrats, you're looking at increasingly the odds are that they are going to retake the House of Representatives.
Really?
So if you're looking, yes, that basically in 2022, the Republicans overperformed in suburban New York City and in suburban LA. And so those seats in a presidential year, those are hard pressed for Republicans to retain. So with a 5-seat majority, the Republicans can only afford to lose 4 seats. And we're also seeing, too, some other seats are coming online, including in Wisconsin. So if any of your listeners in western Wisconsin or even people that just want to see a good Democrat take on a questionable at best Republican, Rebecca Cook over there in Wisconsin 3, Democrats are increasingly bullish on her chances, and some of the internal polling has shown that to be a single-digit race with a chance for an upset and Rebecca Cook knocking off Derek Van Orten.
That would be seismic, I would think.
To have a Democrat in western Wisconsin be able to keep it competitive, that helps at the presidential level. It's a reflection upon you've got Tim Walz, the next-door neighbor. Everybody over those media markets knows who he is.
Yep.
That has definitely helped Democrats' chances in a region of the state where typically the Republicans in the Trump era have overperformed. So we're looking at some other seats that are coming in the Sun Belt, which Democrats in North Carolina's 1st District, they're looking to knock off an incumbent Democrat. If he's able to retain his seat, then he should be in good shape. But the North Carolina, as I can testify firsthand from being here and living here, the Republicans were able to take control of the state Supreme Court. And we saw in Wisconsin how advantageous that was for the Democrats to take control of the Supreme Court. In North Carolina, the pro-democracy side lost control of the Supreme Court, and the Republicans were able to push a very gerrymandered map that will net them at least 3 congressional seats in North Carolina alone, which is why the Democrats are really pushing hard in both New York, California, and trying to get those other seats like the Van Orden seat in Wisconsin to be in play.
Yeah, so it's, it's interesting, you know, obviously you'd love to have all 3 branches, but it's like, which one would you, which one would you want, the House or the Senate, which one is the one that makes the most sense to keep or retain? But we're going to talk a little more about this on the other side of the break here. We've got a good friend of the show, former Republican strategist Carlton Huffman here on The Rational Revolution.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Much of the Southeast is beginning a long recovery after Hurricane Helene. Senator Lindsey Graham was on CNN State of the Union describing devastation in his state of South Carolina.
If you draw a line from Hilton Head to Charlotte, everything west of it is pretty well wiped out.
Vice presidential nominees J.D. Vance and Tim Walz are preparing for their only debate to be hosted by CBS News this Tuesday. Republican Congressman Tom Emmer of Minnesota is helping Vance prepare by playing Walz in mock debates.
Once he understands that Tim Walz is just going to try and deflect and go into this folksy whatever, he'll hold him accountable. I think J.D. will do a great job.
Emmer was on ABC's This Week, as was former Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake, who endorsed Democrat Kamala Harris for president.
One thing that she brings to the table is that she knows how to work on a bipartisan basis. And if we do immigration reform that endures, it's going to have to be bipartisan.
CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Toscano.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Jordan Love returns. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with Sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. After missing 2 weeks with an MCL sprain, Love will take over at quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. Love said the Vikings will present a great challenge for the Packers offense.
You know, anytime you're holding the ball or sitting in the pocket, you know, those guys are really good on the other side, and they're going to find a way to get home. So it's always trying to get the ball out of my hands as quick as possible. And we'll do some good things protection-wise to be able to stop that. But at the end of the day, like I said, they're a good defense. They got really good rushers, and Flores does a really good job of sending a lot of pressures. It's an exotic defense, so you just got to be locked in.
Kickoff against the Minnesota Vikings is at noon. USC dominated Wisconsin football in the second half yesterday, putting up 28 points in the second half to stun the Badgers 38-21. Wisconsin has dropped two in a row and hosts Purdue on Saturday with an 11 a.m. kick. The Brewers, who are locked into the NL's third seed, defeated a potential playoff opponent, the New York Mets, with a 6-0 shutout Saturday. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny skies for today. The big story, though, that breezy north wind gusting up around 30 miles per hour. That will cause some large waves there along the shoreline. High temperatures in the lower 70s. For the overnight, mostly clear, lower 60s. Currently 71 degrees.
The Spotlight will focus on Governor Tim Walz and Senator J.D. Vance Tuesday night, October 1st. Listen here as the vice presidential candidates debate issues important to you.
Go to the polls as a parent. You should have more power.
A belief that one person can make a difference.
Wisconsin Decides 2024. Special coverage starts at 7:45 p.m. Then listen to the CBS vice presidential debate live at 8, Tuesday, October 1st, here on your local Civic Media radio station.
October 12th and 13th is Waukesha Unlocked. The doors to more than 80 businesses, restaurants, and churches will be unlocked to highlight the city's architecture, history, and behind-the-scenes operations. Tour the city clean water plant or booster pumping station. On Saturday, Bill Quackenbush talks about the history of the Ho-Chunk Nation and the significance of the mounds at Cutler Park. Don't forget to turn in your trail challenge cards at City Hall to be put into a drawing for great prizes. Visit Waukesha Unlocked headquarters at City Hall between 10 and 4 on Saturday or Sunday for more information.
Farmers in Wisconsin have always been ahead of the times, and it's no different in the mid-1800s. George Esterly was running a large wheat farm outside of Whitewater, but reaping his crop by hand was back-breaking work. Esterly invented a mechanical harvesting machine and used it in his own fields in 1844. He then won a Chicago Mechanics Gold Medal 4 years later. But was he the first in the country to build a harvesting machine? The answer is coming up. Esterly followed up his win by opening a factory in the Whitewater area, building the harvesting machines and eventually other farm equipment too. By the 1880s, 500 people worked there. So was Esterly the first in the country to build a new mechanical harvesting machine? Yes, this man's early farm invention lives on as a remarkable slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
Dom Selvia.
Next time, James Vanderloo, the head of OEC Group, an expert in transatlantic trade and tariffs, will get all wonky with me. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. What's up, revolutionaries? I've been using that. That's a good shoe. You know what I mean? We've got Carlton Huffman, dear friend of the show here. We're talking about balance of power and all this other kind of stuff. But I want to pivot a little bit, and not to doom and gloom everything, but like, let's walk down this path. All right, it's going to be January 6th again. And when the vote is certified, how poetic, you know. Let's say Kamala Harris wins this thing. What stunts can the GOP try to pull?
Well, there are a number of scenarios that we can look at based upon what happened in 2020, but also what they are currently doing and trying to tee up. And I can sit here and say, the good news is that Donald Trump is not in the Oval Office with the powers of the presidency and the executive branch to back up a lot of his shenanigans. The bad news is that Republicans at a lot of these state level positions have definitely tried to mess around with the rules. But basically, it comes down to this. So just let's picture election night. If Kamala Harris were to either be in the lead, looking like she's going to win, or is actually proclaimed the winner by the networks. In Georgia alone, you have a board of elections that is made up of a majority of pro-MAGA Republicans, not even regular Republicans, but outright pro-MAGA Republicans. They have changed the rules that basically have demanded all 157 counties in Georgia have to count their ballots by hand, which that is Georgia being one of the top 10 most populated states in the country, that is going to delay any certification or even just knowing what the results are going to be for days, if not up to a few weeks.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So, and they also put in the rules where the county boards cannot certify the election if there are reasonable challenges to those results. So basically, they are trying to throw in to question, number one, what the results are even going to be, but also to delay as long as possible any chance that we would have any certainty over Georgia. In North Carolina, they changed the rules to a similar standard when it comes to the absentee ballots as Wisconsin. And what I mean by that is that Wisconsin law requires until election day, the election officials have to wait to be able to process and then count those ballots.
Right.
Before that, North Carolina had a system where they would be processed a lot faster. So once again, it is taking a state and slowing down the process by which the results can be both counted and then certified. And in Michigan is probably the most chaotic of setups. And we saw this in 2020 where you had certain, it was required that the counties have to certify the election results. You had Republicans who were throwing a monkey wrench into the system, basically refusing to certify the results, even though Michigan was won decisively by Joe Biden in 2020. So every contribution by the MAGA Republicans is to do two things: slow it down and basically throw the certification process into chaos. So even if we have an established vote count with Kamala Harris in the lead, they're trying to set the tone for a weeks-long, two-month-long period of challenges to the results.
Which is hilarious because one of the things that the Republicans, you know, pissed and moaned about, I think I can say that on the radio, was the fact that, you know, we have these late-night ballot dumps. And so now there is nothing out of the ordinary about these, quote, late-night ballot dumps. But now what they've done is they've made them likely across the entire country.
It absolutely is. I mean, and it is basically trying to sow confusion. They put a brake on the legitimate actors, the legitimate media, and the legitimate election actors who are just trying to get to a result and tell the public what has happened. They're trying to basically force a system where nobody can know anything, or nobody has any clear idea of what's going on. And even when it was pretty well known, as we headed into the wee hours of the morning in election 2020, we saw that Biden was beginning to take the lead in a lot of these battleground states, including Wisconsin. But because they had the Trump folks had several hours to sow the doubts about these potential ballot drops, they were able to twist a lie that has taken hold of the entire Republican Party that we're still dealing with 4 years later, where a significant portion, if not a majority of Republicans, think that the 2020 election was stolen. And they are trying to do that at scale this time.
Yeah, he could lose by 12 million votes. He's not going to concede. What are they going to try to do? So we know what the strategy is on election night. It's to run out the clock, to not have a winner that night, you know, and try to sow as much confusion as possible. Between Election Day and January 6th, when the or on January 6th itself here of 2025, what are they going to try to do with the process there?
Well, you have, thankfully, they did build in a few additional protections, which formalized the vice president's role in certifying the election. It is kind of hilarious to me that regardless of what happens, Kamala Harris is going to be the one counting the votes in terms of the she's going to be the presiding officer over the Senate, counting those electoral votes as they come in. But just as Mike Pence understood it implicitly, it is now explicit in law that the vice president's job is to just sit there, count the votes, and announce them. But what you could see in terms of trying to delay the certification in a lot of these states is to do what they tried to do last time, is to have one or two states thrown into question and deny Kamala Harris the 270 electoral votes in the Electoral College, and then it would be thrown into the House of Representatives. And this is where it gets very dicey, because even though whether the Democrats took the majority or not, the House of Representatives votes by state, not by sheer number of members, but votes by state, meaning that the congressional delegations in those states would be in charge of delivering those states to one or the other. And the way things are structured around the country right now, if they all voted in a partisan manner, that would deliver the presidency to Donald Trump if it got to that point.
Is it legal? They could do that?
It's as legal as a handshake.
Oh,
and that is the one thing that they realize they cannot win the popular vote as the Republican Party has structured itself right now. They have basically written off entire parts of the country. They don't care about urban areas. They count those people as illegitimate. They do not care about suburban voters who have questions about abortion, questions about the increasingly racist language when it comes to immigration. Right. They only care about getting enough of their voters in the solid MAGA areas out to the polls, win enough of the Electoral College, and failing the Electoral College, throw a monkey wrench into that and get it to the floor of the House of Representatives, where the majority of states in this country, by their congressional delegation, are more Republican, whether that is a reflection of the overall majority or not. And by process, that would deliver the presidency to Donald Trump.
And so, as we talked to Carlton Huffman, former Republican strategist and a dear friend of the show, remind me, how would they do that? How would they force this to the House of Representatives?
If, say, the Georgia votes were in so much question, much like Florida in 2000, it comes down to a close vote where the Board of Elections does not want to certify whether there's enough electoral ballot questions in Michigan to where they're not going to certify, or if it's another state like Arizona. Fortunately, Arizona seems a little bit more on the safe side, since we have a Democrat governor and a Secretary of State there that would probably be able to put the brakes on any hijinks that they would pull out there. But in places like Georgia and places like Michigan, you don't need a governor or a Secretary of State. All you need is enough county boards to refuse to certify the votes of the election. And then that would probably bring things into a legal battle, which would at that point, in the Republicans' minds, hopefully deny those states' ability to have their electoral votes counted on January 6th, and therefore throw it into the House of Representatives.
And it just on a state-by-state basis, or the entire thing?
It would be on a state-by-state basis.
Okay. So it could happen, but the likelihood of it happening is what would you say that would be?
It depends on, if we are basing the scenario on Kamala Harris winning the presidency on Election Day, it would depend on, does she win it by just that blue wall and that Nebraska electoral vote, which would put her at exactly 270 electoral votes, and therefore all they would need is Michigan to drop off? Or does she pick off one of those Sun Belt states? If she picks off more than two Sun Belt states, then I think that the likelihood of the scenario drops to almost zero. But if it comes down to that 270 path just through the blue wall and Nebraska, it could jump to as much as 50%, if not more, at that point.
Wow. Okay. And so I mean, is this something where they would like run out the clock and here we are on inauguration day and and no one shows up, you know, because we're still in a battle or, you know.
It's happened. This has happened before in American history. This happened without like the nefarious scheming of people like Donald Trump. But right. Thomas Jefferson was elected in this manner in 1800. You had in 1876, they did not know who the president was going to be on Inauguration Day because they had three states in the South, including Florida and South Carolina, that were still in dispute. And it only came down to it was a corrupt bargain that basically delivered the South into the hands of Jim Crow. And the Republicans were able to keep the presidency, but they did not know who the president was going to be. So they made dual invitations out. And that is a unlikely scenario, but it is not unprecedented. And it is entirely these rare but not entirely unprecedented scenarios that you have these Trump lawyers and these Federalist Society appointees looking to poke holes wherever they can. As long as Donald Trump wins the presidency, they don't care how they get there.
And what's wild to me is, like, you know, instead of trying to improve your message and, you know, speak to voters in a way that, you know, changes their mind and wins them over by process of giving a positive message for your vision for the country. No, we have to find the little legalese that allows us to slither our way back into the Oval Office. It's just wild.
And I think you and me are both like firsthand witnesses to the devolution of the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
Because both of us would consider ourselves, we came of age in the 90s, early 2000s. Yep. And so there were rules of decorum. There were rules where we said we might not like the outcome, but we accept it. But around the time, beginning originally with Bill Clinton to a lesser extent, but definitely with Barack Obama, Republicans refused to accept the legitimacy of the fact that there was a majority of the country that saw things differently than them on a select number of issues. And so they thought Obama was an illegitimate president. They think Joe Biden is an illegitimate president. They will do everything they can if she were to win to paint Kamala as an illegitimate president, because they don't think that there is a their worldview is basically set in stone that there is no legitimate way that they can lose an election unless it's by fraud or by criminality. And we saw it firsthand as we were getting into our waning days as very partisan Republicans that people, it would not be uncommon for us to hear Obama referred to in a racial epithet or derogatory way, and also have it basically implied there was no way he legitimately won the presidency.
Yeah, there was a guy that I replaced on the Brown County Republican Party board, and it was because he would use the worst racial slur in reference to Barack Obama, and yeah, I mean, that was just seeing that become normal is really awful. So I hope to do this again as we get closer, because I think that would be really beneficial. And these are all, it's always good to hear kind of where things are at, and you have such a good understanding of all of this. So my dear friend Carlton Huffman, thank you so much for your time today. We got to do this again, and good luck to the old dogs this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Go Braves, go Dogs.
Thank you, brother. Good talking with you. All right, we'll be right back here on the show.
You're listening to the Shaw WAUK, Waukesha's home for Up North News Radio.
Are you looking to tackle a heating or cooling project? Menards is your heating and cooling headquarters. Whether you're installing a new system or upgrading an old one, we carry a wide range of ductwork sizes and styles to fit your needs. Plus, we have the tools and installation accessories to help you complete your project. Shop our great selection of ductwork products and check out our weekly flyer on menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Have you outgrown your health insurance plan? The number one reason we all change our health insurance is price. Are you paying too much for your health insurance? Would you like to have better coverage at a better rate? Take a few minutes right now and find out if you can save money or even qualify for zero-cost health insurance in your state. Call now.
800-693-9308. 800-693-9308. That's 800-693-9308.
The Shaw, WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
What's going on, revolutionaries?
That is good, yeah.
Thank you again so much for listening and sticking with us and all that good stuff. And thank you again to Carlton Huffman. He's such a good guy. You know, I've known him for many, many years. And I remember the first time I met him at the local Republican Party office, and he was this chipper guy with this thick Southern drawl. And I'm like, who in the hell is this dude? You know? And we got to talking, and I realized that chipper Southern, that's who he is. And once you get over that as a, you know, Midwest person that typically minds their own business, you realize what a good friend he is. And so I'm so glad he's a friend of our show. So I hope you enjoyed that. And again, I want to remind you, download that Civic Media app, because you can select your station and then text the show, because I'm going to ask you to do that here in this segment. And this is the musing segment. And this is kind of becoming my favorite, because I just get to, you know, talk about whatever the heck I want. And it's this past week has been kind of difficult for me. You know, and it in the business, we're trying to grow and I'm trying to make all the right decisions. It's just hard, you know, and there's so much uncertainty and so much unease. And, you know, I don't know what to do. There's no playbook for what we're trying to do, but we just try to push forward. And I know that, like, what I'm going through, it's just like first world problems. But something hit me like a ton of bricks, and I watch reels with my kid at night. That's kind of what we do. We hang out and watch reels as we drift off to sleep. My wife loves it. but there was a reel of the dude from Blue's Clues, Steve. And he was like, "How you doing?" And the responses were like, they were just heavy. And you could kind of see it in his eyes as he would read, you know, "It's hard out here, man." And people that are truly struggling, and whether it's first world problems or not, but, you know, the struggling with the prospects of not being able to retire or raising kids while worrying if they're going to come home from school or not. And bullying, and trying to balance loving your children with parenting them, and or just trying to deal with the costs of housing going up or food. And, you know, it is hard out here. And this is kind of where I want you to text something, right? And we're going to go over it next week. But I know that so many people are struggling. And I guess, you know, this segment, I do want to tell you that you guys are seen. You know, whether it's me, whether it's other people in your life, like, you're seen, right? And, you know, I know God knows I don't have all the answers to everything. but I want to encourage everybody not to give up and do what works for you. I want to tell you what works for me. And I saw this once on a reel, and it was this guy. He's like some sort of a psychologist or whatever, you know, one of those. And he was saying that start every day by looking at yourself in the mirror and saying three words to yourself, and you got to mean it, right? And if you can't, and say it 10 times, because by the 10th time, you're going to mean it. And if you don't mean it by the 10th time, then say it 20 times and tell yourself, "I love you." Look at yourself in the mirror, say, "I love you." Say it 10 times. And if you don't mean it by the 10th, keep going until you mean it. And I do that every day. And it's all, you know, I start And it's like I'm rolling my eyes, but by like time six or seven, I can look at myself, take a deep breath and be like, okay, I do love you. Because that's how it starts. And nothing good happens if you don't love yourself. You have to do that, right? And that's been really incredible advice for me as some things have been, you know, a struggle or hard to deal with. And the most important thing for me has been staying close with the people that mean the most to me. You know, I talk about how we watch reels with my kid at night, and my wife rolls her eyes, but it's therapeutic too. And, you know, the biggest thing is in the morning, you know, my kid will crawl in. We were very close. He's seven, and I have other kids, so I'm a terrible father here. But like we have a very close relationship, and they'll come into bed and we'll snuggle, and I'll just sit there and say, you know, if I have nothing, I still have everything because I've got them. Period. And that's huge. So what I want you to do is I want you to text our show. How do we do that? Hey, download the free Civic Media app, select your station, and tell me what works for you. What is working for you? And I'm going to read that for everybody else because, excuse me, it's getting hot in here or something. Because if we can figure out what works for each other, we're all in this together. So tell me what you're struggling with. Tell me how you get through every day. And we can help each other out. That's a big deal because we're all in this together. My friends, my revolutionaries, you are loved and I don't want you to give up either. So text the show, download that app. And we can share some cool ideas together during this musing segment next week. So I really want to hear from you. I want to hear how your life is, what you're going through, and when the going gets tough, how do you, as the tough person, get yourself going? Cool? Keep in touch with us here on the Rational Revolution. Thank you all so much. Again, I'm Mark Becker. We'll see you next week. We got a powerhouse guest. It's going to be cool. Have a good week, everybody.
But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be all right?
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, very excited to have Lee McGowan, the politics girl, is going to join us as we break down the upcoming 2024 presidential election. Don't miss it.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Are you ready to start a meaningful career in healthcare? Are you looking for a job that fits your work-life balance? Become a certified direct care professional today and make life better for older adults or people with a disability. WISC Caregiver Careers makes it easy. With free online training, plus earn a $500 bonus. See your name on Wisconsin's Certified Direct Care Registry. Sign up today at WISCCaregiverCDCP.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. The death toll from Hurricane Helene is rising now at 76. North Carolina is one of the hardest hit states, with homes underwater, power out to tens of thousands, and travel limited to only 280 roads. Governor Roy Cooper.
This unprecedented storm dropped from 10 to 29 inches of rain across the mountains, causing life-threatening floods and landslides.
WTSP-TV reporter Aaron Parsegian is covering cleanup and recovery efforts in the Tampa Bay area of Florida.
In the city of Crystal River, full homes worth of damaged belongings lay out on the sides of roads. Along Kings Bay, several feet of water went into homes and businesses.
The whole restaurant's outside.
The popular Crackers restaurant and bar is cleaning up and trying to get back open.
It's crazy. It is, but thank God for everybody that helps. Because if we didn't have that, it would be weeks before we open up.
FEMA Administrator Dan Criswell says hurricanes are changing.
In the past, when we would look at damage from hurricanes, it was primarily wind damage with some water damage. But now we're seeing so much more water damage. And I think that is a result of the warm waters, which is a result of climate change.
Criswell was on CBS's Face the Nation in Beirut. Israeli airstrikes hit about 120 Hezbollah targets in Lebanon and killed dozens of people, leaving Hezbollah reeling. Also today, the Israeli military said dozens of aircraft struck Houthi targets in Yemen. Linda Gradstein reports.
The army said it attacked